Hello all and welcome back to the Damage Report. I am Johnny Royal. Today is a Thursday, which means we have a special guest joining us who has not been on in a while. Caroline Johnson returns to the Damage Report. Caroline, how's it going?
Good. You know, Wi-Fi giving some severe issues today. So hopefully it'll let me stay on for a little bit. And if it doesn't, I am.
That would be great. Yes, it is rare that we have a guest connect during the intro animation, but we made it happen. And that's awesome. People who've been watching the Damage Report for some time have seen you on multiple times. But for those who might not be familiar with your work for the network, tell me a little bit about some of the videos you've been making recently and where people can watch them.
Yeah, absolutely. So over on Rebel HQ, I've been making videos probably like 3 to 4 times a week. So there's always something different happening. Tend to focus recently a lot on obviously everything that's going on with COVID, but as we will get into, it's just always a mess there. So trying to find some new interesting stories. Typically also like to cover like the intersection of culture and politics. Yeah, we've got your straight politics, Republican nonsense, Trump kids shenanigans, but then always trying to throw some new and fun things in there as well.
Thank you. I share your mission in that regard. and actually we'll have most of that stuff. No, Trump kids, we'll have most of that stuff on the show today. A mess involving COVID and other fun news as well. Also, in the last half hour of the show, we are going to be launching into, meanwhile, in our roundup of international news stories. It's been a big week for just fun, quirky, interesting international news. So we're going to be closing out the show with that. So don't go anywhere. We are obviously starting a little bit late, but we're going to try to fit everything in. We might have to move it a little bit faster clip than normal. But before we launch into our first story, if you wouldn't mind hitting the like button and sharing the stream, that would be great. And you can send us messages, comments, tweets, all that. And we will cover those as we go. Thank you, Sophie. That is a good reminder. But with that said, Caroline, you ready to launch into this thing?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, here we go.
6 former administration officials last week wrote that open letter urging the administration to change course, to change strategy. Is it time?
It is time for us to do what we have been doing, and that time is every day. Every day it is time for us to agree.
Okay, so that is that's been going around, that clip around on the internet. It's obviously not a great answer to the question. It doesn't really shed much light on the situation in the administration, what they view about COVID. Will they be changing things up? But also at this point, Harris isn't really known for necessarily doing the best in these interview type situations. That clip reminded a lot of people of cousin Greg from Succession testifying before Congress. Maybe a little bit of Michael Scott having to explain why his branch has been doing so well. You start a sentence and you don't necessarily know where it's going to end. But obviously, that this is hardly the most important part of the Biden administration's response to this whole thing. So we're going to launch into what evidence, if any, was provided about how the Biden administration is going to be changing gears to deal with COVID. But just really fast opportunity for you, Caroline. Any thoughts about Kamala Harris being dispatched in these sorts of situations very rarely seems to help the administration?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I do have sympathy with Kamala in this moment because, I don't know if this is happening to you, John, if you've been in an interview, maybe a Young Turks live show, and you just maybe were not listening to the question, didn't know they were going to bring you in. And then you just like hear the last word of the question. So you take that word. I think it was time. And you're just like, time. We have the time. Yeah. So anyway, I have been there. I also am not the vice president of the United States. So there's a little difference there. But yeah, you're totally right. Like they keep putting Kamala into these situations and she does not rise to the level that is needed right now. But overall, as you mentioned earlier, like this does really capture what the strategy is right now. I don't think there's a more perfect soundbite out there of just like what's going on, what the response is, what the strategy is. So it's the response we deserve right now.
Yeah. Well, she did provide a little bit of information, although the White House did have to sort of respond almost in real time to what she was saying. So she said during that interview that 500 million COVID-19 tests were being prepared to ship to every American household soon. A White House official clarified the timetable, saying that they would be sent out later this month, And the contracts to create the tests were expected to be awarded over the next 2 weeks. So I was a little bit confused by that clarification. I found it to be unclarifying, because if in the next 2 weeks, like, the contracts are to be determined, it better be on the short side of the next 2 weeks. If you're then gonna produce the tests and ship them out before the end of this month, it's already the 13th. How many weeks do they think are in January? But anyway, this does seem to me, I vaguely remember when, in response to Jen Psaki's really condescending response to a question about whether they'd be sending out free tests, they said they would be sending them out. And at that point, they said it would be around the end of January. So it doesn't seem yet like things are really slipping from that original timeline, even if now it certainly looks like it would have been helpful if these had come out like a month ago, considering all the new cases coming out every day.
Yeah, it's once again, it's just the whole strategy can be summed up in being caught on our back heels the whole time. And again, yeah, of course, Omicron is still surging. But like you said, this is something that we could have preempted, that the government could have preempted and gotten these even just a week earlier, a couple weeks earlier. And it's nice to know that as the public, we have leverage, as you said, Jen Psaki, like that. The backlash to that does seem like it spurned a lot of action on behalf of the government, which is good, but we don't want that at this point. We're 2 years into a pandemic. You'd think that at this point they would have some coherent strategy that we could fall behind rather than us having to set the parameters every single month, it seems like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and so let me give you a little bit more information, and then we can talk a bit more generally about the response and what can be done, what we think might be done. President Biden is also going to announce later on today a surge deployment of military medical personnel to support hospitals currently dealing with a spike of COVID-19 cases. That certainly seems necessary, considering that we're now at record hospitalizations from COVID. So congratulations to everyone for that. We know that a lot of nurses and doctors are either quitting, they've been burned out after nearly 2 years of this pandemic, or are themselves sick and can't actually work. So good that we have the surge coming in. The thing though that I want to talk briefly with you though, Caroline, is like there's frustration, I think rightfully so, that COVID is still a thing. So many people are getting sick, so many people are being hospitalized, and the deaths are once again going up. In fact, if we bring up this chart, you'll see, although again, milder, deaths are up 51% in the last 2 weeks on average. So yes, milder, but when like a million people are getting sick a day and lots of them are unvaccinated, mild only gets you so far. A lot of people still die. So there's frustration there. I don't know what that was. I think a dragon just landed on the studio. There's a desire for more to be done. And even the right will criticize him, saying like, hey, more people died last year than in 2020. But Caroline, what could he do or the administration do that they would take part in, that they would be like, someone just commented, Jim Garcia said, what a waste of money. 70 million people would just throw them away, the free tests that are going to be sent out. Yeah, they're going to be burning them on TikTok, right wingers. So they want him to do more, but they won't be a party to any of this. So what should he do at this point, if anything?
I don't know. I mean, it's a good question and one that's been plaguing Biden's administration, but also specifically his COVID response since the beginning. I mean, yeah, it there's definitely a lot to criticize the Biden administration for, but when you take the reality that people on the right, there's nothing Biden can do to satisfy them. I think what we kind of have to focus on is the fact that private businesses are the ones being able to set the parameters of like vaccine mandates and whether you need to have a negative test or something. And I really think at this point, that's the only thing that the administration can do is sort of give businesses and give workers the freedom to sort of set what they would feel comfortable with in terms of their public health rules for their establishments, because you're right, they're not going to listen to the administration saying, here's a test, go, you know, be safe with it. But they might listen to a restaurant that says you have to have a test to, you know, come dine here or whatever, because Lord knows they're all trying to go get back out and into normal as if nothing happened. So I don't know, maybe just giving more credit and more material support to businesses that are going to be dealing with these people who are unvaccinated and don't want to test, things like that.
Yeah, I would certainly like that. Although, of course, if Biden puts pressure on businesses to do that, the right is certainly going to squeal about that.
Yeah.
They're not going to like any of that. Honestly, at this point, like, I like that they're sending out the tests, and you know, we're going to talk about masks in one moment. But again, the right isn't going to take them. Honestly, at this point, in terms of sending stuff out, I feel like their efforts would be better served in some sort of governmental reverse psychology. Whereas, like if they were to send out free doses of colloidal silver. Or like all you can smear ivermectin or urine sippy cups or something. At least maybe that could get them to turn away from some of their non-remedies that the right has been willing to take. But anyway, let's turn to one other angle on this. Our views on what needs to be done in terms of masking have evolved a little bit recently for Omicron. Cloth masks are I mean, look, there have always been concerns about cloth masks as a deterrent to disease, but it is becoming increasingly clear that with an especially virulent strain of COVID like Omicron, that they are not going to provide sufficient protection. N95 masks potentially could. So Bernie Sanders is introducing legislation. He's got 10 or with 50 of his colleagues, by the way, to produce N95 masks, one of the most effective ways to stop the spread of COVID-19 and distribute them to every American free. So N95s for all, basically, is what he would like. It is the Masks for All Act, 15 co-sponsors, Elizabeth Warren, Ed Markey, seems like kind of a slam dunk that would send three N95 respirator masks to individuals. And we know that, like with tests, N95s have become difficult to find. The prices have been jacked up. And this, for people who are at least willing to put them on, could be helpful. They want to use the US Postal Service, but also make them available at schools, pharmacies, and public transportation stations. I mean, that seems like something that could be done. The right, again, Caroline, would hate it. But I like that Sanders is trying to help people out, especially with the financial burden part of this pandemic.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think all of this just hammers home an idea that Bernie Sanders, I think, really brought to the forefront of American politics, is the idea that offering universal services to people, of course, within that there are going to be people who disagree and aren't going to use them and are going to be mad. But the idea is that if you give it to everyone, it eliminates the gap between those who would, but they can't afford it. And I think, you know, his whole refrain was, fight for someone you don't know. And I think it's really important that there does come that risk of it might be someone who politically disagrees with you, which is why I think these, like, not having these means testing things for something like a mask that is, you know, we should have sort of like a wartime production of these masks that everyone who wants one is able to get one. And yeah, I mean, they're 75% more effective. The campus that I'm on sent a message that was like, yeah, cloth masks are no longer valid. You have to be wearing a KN95 or an N95. And then that just begs the question of like, well, you know, how can I afford this if the prices are being jacked up? Again, it's the administration being caught on their back heels by saying, well, now we know that there's proof that these are way more effective. But at the same time, you can't say that everyone has to be wearing them in public spaces if you're not going to make them available. Yeah. And so I think this, like, just universal sending them everywhere so that no one has an excuse if they don't have one. I think that's what's really important. Because if everyone sent one, then it's harder to have the excuse of, oh, well, you know, they were $100 on Amazon, something like that. So I hope this goes forward.
Yeah, I agree. I saw the CDC is not expected to change their guidance for what sort of masks to wear, even though it's now, I mean, it's so clear that the cloth masks aren't up to the task. And so the CDC, like, has, I think, received in the first year of the pandemic a lot of really unfair partisan criticism from the right. But I mean, recently, like, we can't look at what the CDC has been doing and really maintain the belief that what they're doing is following the science when they cut isolation times with no update in the science to indicate that it should be shorter, just business pressure to make it as short as possible. And now telling you to continue to use masks that we don't think are effective. Right. Yeah, that's nonsensical. And yeah, in terms of, like you mentioned, the wartime effort to make these masks, that's a great idea. It also, like, it would be a great idea a year and a half ago.
Exactly.
How is that not a thing that we were doing? Like, look at how fast fidget spinners popped up literally everywhere. We can't do the same thing with masks.
I know, it's really insane. And again, this also just gives the right more fodder for their argument that like kids shouldn't be wearing masks, because they can then take these studies that say cloth masks are, you know, not effective, and they can say, well, then why are our kids wearing it? And it just gives them more and more ammunition to just then refute all the rest of the science. Yeah, 2 years. I can't believe we're still having this masking conversation.
We're gonna we need to have like a big event for like the 2 year anniversary of TYT going into lockdown, and and then we'll do it every year after that as the pandemic continues. That'll be fun. Anyway, we're gonna take our first break here. Read some of your comments. When we come back, Glenn Beck has COVID again. We're gonna see if he has changed his opinion on the virus or on vaccination. After this, okay, it has been a while since we've discussed Glenn Beck, but we've got a reason to today. So let's jump into this video.
Despite having COVID and seeing the destruction of our country,
yes,
you know, I'm great.
Now, do you have COVID right now?
Yeah, I do.
So that is Glenn Beck speaking with Mark Levin, and I love Mark Levin's like, wait. But you have COVID right now, and we're gonna play more video for you, and you will see Mark Levin is demonstrating more like audible concern than I've ever heard from him about literally anything. He seems to be taking Glenn Beck's COVID case far more seriously than Glenn Beck is. Understand about Glenn Beck, not only does he, according to him, have COVID right now, he also had it back in mid-April 2021, or at least had recently battled it, according to a conversation he had with Tucker Carlson. He said at that point, I have already had it. Why do I need to be vaccinated again? So he hadn't been vaccinated, by the way. He says again, he had not been vaccinated. He got COVID, says, why do I need to get vaccinated again? And now has COVID again, which, Caroline, is the weirdest thing, because I keep hearing from the right that vaccines are unnecessary because of natural immunity.
Right, or that you can't, even on the left, there's the idea that you can't get COVID again, which I had heard and honestly thought might be true, but that's clearly not the case. I mean, that clip is so funny. It's like you can just tell that a lot of people who haven't gotten vaccinated and then get really debilitating forms of COVID don't want to go there, like don't want that vaccine conversation to come up, when beforehand they were more than willing to engage in why they weren't vaccinated, all of that stuff. But you can just tell the energy gets sucked right out of the room. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think we're watching a little more of the clip, so I'll save some thoughts, but oof.
Yeah, why don't we hear a little bit more right here?
Yeah, I've been off for about a week. I mean, I've been doing my show. It's a lighter case, but it's now starting to go into my lungs today, and a little disturbing. But I'm on, you know, I'm on all the medication and treatment and everything else. So we'll see.
So wait a minute, it's going into your. Have you gotten any monoclonal? I'm serious about this.
No, the monoclonal doesn't seem to be working for the. The new strain, and you can't, but I'm on ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, fluvoxin. I'm on a bunch of different, I mean, and my doctors are hitting it really hard.
Drinking a gallon of urine a day. I mean, I'm doing everything. I'm taking every medicine for other things. So look, I feel bad for everyone who's gotten COVID. I've lost family members to COVID. I take it very seriously. But at a certain point, after the guy who is rich and has the time to learn about this, has every advantage that a person in a public health crisis would want to have, refuses to take it seriously and keeps getting sick, at a certain point, it's hard to be overly compassionate. Now it's hit his lungs again. Understand, he's still not concerned about it. Even with a second infection, it's in his lungs. He says it's disturbing, but he's not overly concerned about having COVID for a second time.
Yeah, and exactly what you said of that regimen of medicine must be so expensive and time consuming. And for someone who, like him, who is able to, I'm assuming, do all of his work probably from his bed or his home, like it's almost, it's just shocking that, someone can take this absolute cocktail of drugs, but for some reason, this vaccine is just unacceptable to them. And you know, there's something about this that he does deserve credit, because a lot of Republicans who are publicly anti-vax have gotten vaccinated. And I'm pretty sure he has not gotten vaccinated. He has indeed gotten vaccinated. It's like, okay, dude, you're not a hypocrite, but at what cost? Like, this is, it's so sad. And on, like, there is a little bit of me that is happy that he's publicly sharing this, because people need to know about the real risks of not getting vaccinated. There is a lot of, you know, there's obviously no incentive for people to really share that their unvaccinated costs of getting COVID. But to some degree, I kind of hope he keeps talking about this and keeps talking about his journey, because that that medical, you know, absolute cocktail of things versus getting the vaccine, honestly, for many anti-vaxxers, who knows, maybe this could be the thing that turns them and says, okay, this is a voice that I trust, and he's really going through it. So maybe that'll be the thing. That's kind of what I'm holding out hope for.
I am not going to bet a lot of money on it, but maybe. Because again, they who knows? They used to say that they were just waiting to make sure that there weren't side effects, and then they just started lying about side effects and lying about people dying from the vaccine. And now it just seems like it's just a political identity thing. Like, no amount of time. It's been almost a year. Where are the supposed side effects? I had J&J back in April. I've been boosted. Why is my head not exploded? So it's something else now. But again, like, they're worried about side effects, supposedly, to give them more credit than they probably deserve. They're worried about side effects, but there are side effects to ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine and all of this stuff. Also, there are side effects to having COVID. The side effect is COVID. Like he said, my second COVID test positive, crap. So far, it's way different than the first time I had in December 20. That time, it wiped me out for almost 3 weeks. This time, it's just the worst cold I have ever had. Well, how about this? Don't have either of those.
Right.
What side effect are you worried about that is worse than 3 weeks of being knocked out from an illness? The worst cold you've ever had? Those are bad things, and you didn't have to have it. If he had even just gotten the vaccine after his first case, he wouldn't have any side effects other than perhaps some arm soreness for a day or two. And likely his immune system would have been better prepared to deal with Omicron right now. But it is just so, it's so brain dead. It's so self-destructive. And I share your hope. Maybe some people will watch this and learn, but there just hasn't been a lot of reason to believe that based on our experience of the last year and a half.
Right. I think it's just the individualism on the right, like this just staunch, like no one else's experience matters but mine. I think that will ultimately prove that no one is really going to learn from this, because no matter what happens, people who are staunchly anti-vaccine on the right just think the rules don't apply to them, and think that there's something about their physical being that is just different than the literal millions of people who have contracted this disease. And you know, you hope that something will find trust contingent into getting the vaccine. And if this doesn't, if a trusted voice on the right going through this devastating ordeal doesn't, then yeah, there's really not much I can think of that would.
Well, and finally, just because he mentioned the ivermectin, and I don't know, maybe some of them are moving on from ivermectin. They really liked hydroxychloroquine in 2020, and then ivermectin had its era in 2021, and now it's like drinking silver or whatever. just less than 1 week ago, the results of another clinical trial of ivermectin to stop COVID has come out. You can see here a screenshot. It's available, by the way, at Science Direct. They say high dose ivermectin demonstrated safe, so they didn't see tons of side effects. It didn't kill people. There was no significant difference in viral load reduction between study arms, but mild and moderate side effects were more frequent with the highest dose of ivermectin. So it didn't kill people. It did provide side effects, and the more you took, the worse the side effects were, and it didn't seem to help at all with COVID. But this test came out a week ago. Is it making the rounds in the ivermectin circles? Nobody cares. Like, they're just gonna take it for literally years without any evidence that it helps. I don't understand. But that said, final thought?
No, just Godspeed. I don't know.
He's gonna get it a third time. He's gonna get it a third time. Mm-hmm. He could die. It's in his lungs right now.
That's what I was gonna say, is just like, I hate, like, he's gonna die. I mean,
I don't want him to, but no, I seem to care more about his life than he does.
That's what's frustrating. It's like, oh God.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll see. He says he has comorbidity. He calls himself literally a fatty fatso in that clip. That's his words. Take it seriously, man. What is wrong with you? Anyway, let's move on to a slightly different topic. Another aspect of the apparently quite multifaceted and complex quest to stop American democracy from functioning and to provide a second Trump presidential term has now been revealed. And that is that back, after the election, but before inauguration, as part of the Electoral College process, there's this thing where governors have to sign what are called certificates of ascertainment, which is basically showing that the slate of electors are the legitimate electors, and various state officials sign off on it and say, we've looked into this, it's right, good. Well, there were a bunch of fake ones. Allies of Donald Trump's in a number of different states just made up their own certificates of ascertainment, which had lists of supposed electors that were not electors. And then they just signed these forged fake things and wanted to use it as a part of their alternate slate of elector strategy, which we've talked about previously. So these were made by Trump supporters in Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, New Mexico, Nevada, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, all independently though. It's not like they were talking to Trump or anything, right? I guess they just all came up with this idea. And they've got the signatures of Trump supporters who claim to be the rightful electors. Those rogue slates of electors didn't have the backing of any elected officials in the seven states, no governors or secretaries of state or anything. But you can see, we'll show you a picture here of one of them. This is just a forged document designed to stop American democracy from functioning. And so, look, the most, I think, damning part of this is that one of these groups in Arizona apparently put this thing together after some sort of day-long meeting in Phoenix with Rudy Giuliani. Now, that does not prove that Rudy Giuliani knew about this or encouraged them to do it, but they're like, while they remain randos, they're not the most random randos. They're the sorts of people on the right that were meeting with the legal team for Donald Trump at this point. Caroline, what do you think about this this strategy, this thing?
Yeah, your last point is very important, because while they may not, they don't hold elected office, people don't really know them, they're not like completely random people. They, studied the intricacies of what, the Electoral College demands after the election to certify it. So a lot of work went into this. And all of this is so insane to me. As we are dealing with the Voting Rights Act that is completely going to stall in Congress, where Democrats want things like Election Day being a federal holiday and same day voter registration, whereas the right is incensed that there could have been one fraudulent vote in the election. So their whole thing is that there are undocumented people voting, the election fraud, blah, 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 blah. Meanwhile, they are making up fake documents with fake signatures, just entire things to overthrow an election. And these are the same people who want to throw people in jail. I mean, remember the case of the Texas woman who was on parole and cast a vote, not knowing that she wasn't allowed to cast a vote, and was sentenced to 5 years in prison in Texas. And yet the same party is just going to such an insane lengths to undermine a democratic election. It doesn't make sense. On the one hand, they're saying, no, we can't have election day off. Like, no, you have to have, you know, really strict ID requirements. And then they're turning a blind eye to people forging documents, sending them to, what is it? Was it the National Archives?
The National Archives, yeah.
Wherever they send.
Yeah.
The National Archives, yeah, where they send these votes to. It's insane. And of course, the Republican Party isn't going to, you know, come out and say anything about this. It'll just be like, oh, these fringe, whatever. But it's just unfathomable. It really is.
Well, and here's the thing that scares me even more is that, you know, we can take some solace in the fact that no secretaries of state or governors signed on to these things. So are we expecting that the next time they try to do this, they won't? I mean, there are multiple, like, people who literally participated in the insurrection on January 6th who are running to become secretaries of state right now. What do we think those people are gonna, like, do all that work, then get into office and they have an opportunity to do this again, but I'd probably get caught. I don't want to get in trouble or something. No, and I think governors, many governors will have been so beaten into submission by Trump and his people that they might be willing. Maybe not, but there's a reason they're running in all these elections, and it's to make this sort of strategy more successful. It's not the only reason they want to have these secretaries of state. Sure, they'd love to sign these things, but they'd also like to strip polling places from certain locations where they think there might be more Democrats and run more sham audits, throw out votes that they don't like. And all of that is coming in the next few elections. And I don't think that people are appropriately terrified of that yet.
Right. And if there's one thing that we need to take from this on the left, it's that, and we all know this, that Republicans historically have been incredibly diligent and focused on local municipal offices. And Democrats have been caught on our heels with this type of strategy and, you know, spending more time invested in, like, Senate and the presidential race. But we have to, in 2024, we have to be disciplined at these local races, not only with just, like, running good candidates, but getting involved at that level. And because you're exactly right, this is what's going to happen. All of these people are, you know, in their own channels on the internet, really strategizing. And it could be the most insane, ridiculous thing, but it's still strategizing. And it really still does have the potential to work and get people into these offices that most people aren't paying attention to. And then before you know it, something like this could totally be pulled off. It's like, we have to think of this not as a fluke, like, crazy thing that they did, but as a legitimate strategy that they're testing out for future elections.
I agree. Well, with that, we are going to take our second break. When we come back, we're going to give you an update on an additional strike. Been a great season for unionization efforts and the deployment of that power. We've got another one for you after this. Anyway, with that, let's jump into another story. Over 8,000 Kroger workers in Colorado have gone on strike as of yesterday. They work at a number of different stores in the area, and there had been negotiations going on with the corporation that have apparently broken down, and now this massive strike is ongoing. So for context, the union turned down Kroger's final offer, which would have boosted starting pay to $16 an hour and raised the hourly rate by as much as $4.50 in the first year. It also included ratification bonuses of $4,000 for workers with at least 10 years of experience and $2,000 for more recent hires. But the grocery chain, in turn, rejected a union plan that included a $6 per hour wage increase and, importantly, new security requirements. Protocols sought in the aftermath of a mass shooting at a King Superstore in Boulder last year. And so they're, you know, obviously worried for their safety. And well, they should be, not only from the attacks, but also grocery stores have been places where lots of workers have gotten COVID. It is a dangerous thing to be an essential worker in this time. We don't know how this is gonna shake out, Caroline, but unions have had some impressive wins over the past few months. So I can see them being emboldened by that.
Yeah, absolutely. And as they very much should be. And there was a study that was released recently that said 14% of Kroger workers have been homeless in the past year, and almost like 34% skip or reduce meals, which to be a grocery store worker and you can't even afford groceries or put food on your table is despicable. And of course, the CEO is making like $20 million a year. And actually in LA, like firsthand experience, so they ended their $2, basically at the beginning of the pandemic, for 2 months, they gave a $2 an hour raise. And then as soon as it was like, oh, this pandemic is longer than 2 months, never mind. So they slashed that. And then they literally had to close, they instead of keeping that hazard pay, they closed many stores across the country, and the Food for Less near me in Los Angeles just shut it down right in the middle of the pandemic. And you know, that was a grocery store that many low income people would shop at. And rather than keeping that $2 per hour pay raise for grocery store workers in a pandemic, rather than sustaining that, they shut down entire stores that are now just sitting empty. I mean, it's just top to bottom an absolute failure. But yeah, I think the recent strike waves across the country do bode well for this this contract, the union contract.
Yeah, definitely, especially with so many people being involved. That's going to be a difficult one for them to, in the short term, break through. I wanted to give a little bit more details about, you had mentioned a poll of some of the workers that have been done. So this is an economic roundtable poll, and the numbers are just amazing here. So they talked to 10,000 different workers in Colorado, California, and Washington. They found 70% of respondents work only part-time, with many working erratic schedules, so they can't have a second job even if they want to. 2/3 said they couldn't afford basic monthly expenses. 39% couldn't afford groceries. 14% said they'd experienced homelessness in the past year, and more than 1/3 said they're currently worried about being evicted. And look, obviously, if we were outside of the pandemic, that would help a little bit in some of this, but that would not wholly close this gap. And this is interesting additional information about the horrible circumstance that so many people who are literally trying to just work, they're trying to do everything that they've told that they're supposed to do, but even doing it, they don't feel economically secure. And you can add that on to, you know, past information about how much the federal government effectively subsidizes companies like Walmart through social services, because people aren't paid enough to actually live. They're working full time, but they can't actually live on that money. And so it is not just a Walmart thing, other chains as well. So we'll have to see how these negotiations go on. Like we've been saying throughout this, there's been some successes recently, and thankfully there are some politicians who are standing with these efforts. Bernie Sanders, in response to the Kroger announcement, put out a tweet saying, "I stand in solidarity with the workers at Kroger in Colorado. If Kroger can afford to pay its CEO over $20 million and spend $1 billion on stock buybacks, you know what? It can afford to pay its workers better wages and benefits with safe working conditions." And I agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I think just the only final thing is, if they do go on strike, Kroger's in a lot of places, and a lot of stores have different names and different like product. They hold different products. So there's like Kroger products. But anyway, just saying, keep your eye out for where those strikes are actually happening, so you know where to avoid, where you can't shop, because it's not just like the Kroger shop in your town that is closing oftentimes. Like I said, in LA, it was Food for Less, things like that. So we'll definitely be good to know where you should shop and where you should not.
Thank you. Yes, my producers wanted to make sure that I can see this, have made it the biggest font that has ever existed. Harris Teeter, Fred Meyer, Ralph's, Food for, not Ralph's. Like Ralph's, but yes. Ralph's, so, and there's a 25 total brands in this chain. So yes, thank you to the producers for doing that. Okay, and good luck to the workers.
Will the real Dr. Fauci please stand up? Please stand up. Please stand up. Vaccinate your mom. Vaccinate your dad. Vaccinate the happy. Vaccinate the sad. Vaccinate your babies. Vaccinate them, even if they got rabies. Vaccinate my life. Vaccinate my wife. Vaccinate your DNA. Vaccine created by the CIA. Vaccinate your body. Vaccinate me at the party. Vaccination freak. Vaccination, freak a leak. I want the vaccine in my life. I want the vaccine for my wife. I want to vaccinate you all day long. Vaccinate you while I wear my thong. Vaccinate me. Vaccinate who? Vaccinate she. Vaccinate her. Vaccinate them. Vaccinate my friend. I want to vaccinate to the end. Vaccinate me, pure L. I love you. What can I say? DNA, I love you. I got the pure L, feeling pure, so clean. Got the Lysol, because I'm calling Paul. Do you got to clean the mic? You got to vaccinate. You going to get corona from Mona. Don't vaccinate. Don't wait. Don't hesitate. You got to vaccinate in the Lone Star State.
Okay, so that is Alex Stein. There's a chance some in the audience might have seen that because it has been going around very understandably. He is a comedic YouTuber and actor who has gone viral for that rap for a few different reasons, I feel like. Caroline, the thing I find most interesting about this is the people who don't, like, that would watch that and think, that's, I don't like that. I don't like that. I take it very seriously. Benny Johnson, who is like considered a serious person on the right, says this is the end stage of mass formation psychosis. Final boss. And I am an expert on mass formation psychosis, a thing that does not exist because I heard a doctor or someone say the name on Joe Rogan. He's spraying himself with hand sanitizer. He's talking about getting coronavirus from Mona. He's not serious, Benny. He's not serious. How could you think that that was a serious thing, Caroline?
I'm so happy I didn't watch this until right now. This is so this is so funny. So people weren't sure if he, like, they thought he actually was a nurse or a doctor, and that's why, like, people got so incensed or what? I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Well, look at this. look at this. So, Amy Tarkanian, a verified person, says the TikTok nurses have taken to doing routines at city council meetings. Here's a nurse in Texas giving a performance. It is a one of a kind. I wonder who he voted for.
Ian
Miles Chong, who's a guy who lives in a different country but is like a part of the right wing media infrastructure for some reason I've never understood, says everything is wrong with the world. That may just be a critique of the song. I don't know. It was a little bit cringy, not as bad as like Kendall and Succession season 2 rap, but it's a little bit cringy. But yeah, they're taking it highly seriously.
I think it's great because first off, it's just funny. And second off, it drives the right insane. And then third off, it does kind of rib Democrats for thinking that, like, when Kamala and Joe Biden had the like dancing nurses, like it sort of jokes, like the joke's on everyone to varying degrees. But yeah, it's worse if you think that this guy is really a doctor. It's very catchy. I'm definitely going to be listening to this the rest of the day.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I think that we need to get some sort of EDM remix. Yeah, and by the way, look, as you point out, he implies that he didn't like seeing nurses on TikTok doing dances. He lost his mom to the virus. Mm-hmm. Takes it very seriously, which I get. But here's the thing, like, so he's not doing this seriously because he actually thinks that vaccination is the best thing ever and this is the best way to do it. But he's also not just totally mocking all of that because he does take it seriously. But that said, you do not need to invest tons of your outrage into a guy who sang and danced at this meeting, regardless of what his position is. Whether he agrees with you or not should not be the most important thing to you, I think. That said, as someone who also, like, I didn't lose my mom to COVID, but I lost a close family member. Nurses have had a very difficult time over the past year or two. I'm gonna give them like license to do whatever the hell they want. If it stops them from feeling burned out, if they want to sing and dance, I that for me is perfectly fine. But anyway, any final thoughts?
Well, yeah, that's true. And it also, him doing this also takes the platform away from some other right wing nut who would have just like screamed about how, you know, there's microchips in a vaccine or something. So that's always good. Taking the platform in a very creative way, definitely, definitely support.
Yeah, 100%. By the way, someone in the chat says it reminds me of a song that Bob Saget would have done, as Galfar would have done during one of his stand-up routines.
Yeah,
and people are saying it's gonna be stuck in their head now. It is pretty catchy, actually. I have to give it to him. I know that he's done other things like this at city council meetings. This is the first one that I've seen, but it's oddly catchy. We have time for one more story before we close things out. Let's jump into this.
All right, some Arizona college students are threatening to go on a second hunger strike if Congress does not pass the voting bill by Monday.
I've seen the consequences of a broken democracy my entire life. Listen to your constituents. We should not have to put our bodies on the line for you to listen to us.
Okay, so Fox and Friends there is announcing that a group of college students in Arizona that had previously during the holidays engaged in a hunger strike is now looking to do it again. They're watching DC, they're watching the Democrats, seeing if they will pass this voting bill. And they're saying if they don't, they're going to engage in another hunger strike. So this is obviously an interesting topic. It's something Fox and Friends could have had, you know, a serious discussion about student activism around, about the state of our democracy. They did not do that, though. In the clip we're about to show you, Pete Hegseth effectively just makes fun of and seems to fat shame some of the student activists.
Pete, these college students are hoping they can do what Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema are keeping the Senate from doing, and that is passing this voting rights thing. I say that because they would have to get rid of the filibuster. Is anybody going to listen to these kids out in Arizona?
No, it didn't work the first time. It's not going to work this time. Their first hunger strike was a sham. This one's a sham. I do think, though, it might help with our bare shelves, Biden bare shelves problem, less food that some people will be eating. And some of them look a little like they're not all that hungry. So that might help a few of them, too, as well. Listen, this is the foolishness of young kids searching for any purpose in their life at all. Their life is so empty that it's a fake voting rights bill based on a fake problem that's entirely unconstitutional that they decide to cling on a cause they know is hopeless. Because thankfully, Manchin and Sinema are and others are not going to move to change the filibuster and overturn the entire United States Senate.
Hey, look, Manchin and Sinema have fans. They're just hosts on Fox and Friends. Caroline, what do you think?
This is just so, it's callous and nasty. And, you know, not to give Fox News any credit at all, but if you have a story and you literally say the words, they have no meaning in their lives, wouldn't you think that a news network that has just like insanely a political agenda would want to tap into the fact that young people across the country are feeling just an utter lack of encouragement? They're at their breaking point, but instead you choose to make fun of them. I mean, you know, it's the hunger strikes are no joke. They are incredibly serious. But I think what we need to look at deeper is this just sense of desperation. And we have a generation of kids who don't think that they can, that their voices matter at all, despite being taught from when they were young that they do. So the fact that Fox News isn't taking this opportunity to, I mean, I think we're lucky that they're not taking the opportunity to say, hey, you know, the Republican Party and Fox News can offer you some solutions. We're lucky that they're not smart enough to do that, because if they figured that out, then that would be a whole nother problem. But instead they just resort to lazy, nasty commentary just to, so they can, you know, use the phrase Biden's bare shelves or whatever, which is just, not funny.
Yeah, they fit in so much about the kids not looking hungry.
They treat this as like a stand-up set where it's like, how many jokes can I get? How much can I make fun of these people or these kids? Yeah. It's so gross.
Yeah, the only addition to what you just said, what I would make is how many jokes can I make? Which is why, like, the fact that they have like Greg Gutfeld's show, like that's what literally every one of your shows is. None of it takes anything seriously, because it's designed to train Americans to not take politics seriously, to not think that it is a serious endeavor that can have a positive effect on their life. It is all just about mocking people. That's the entire point of all of this. Well, these students are serious about this. I would argue they have some meaning in their life. They care to fight for and defend democracy. That seems somewhat meaningful. I know it's not something really cool, like taking a gun you shouldn't have and going to another city and killing a bunch of people, but I would argue it's a good use of time for a young person. Look at the kids they mock and the kids that they love. They mock Greta for literally years for organizing millions of young people around the world. Love Kyle Rittenhouse though. But yeah, those shelves. Anyway, that's all the time we have for our first hour. Thank you everyone for joining us. We do have more coming up. If you're on Twitch or on YouTube, don't go anywhere. Caroline and I are gonna take a short break, but we'll be right back after this.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.